And welcome to AFL Tonight, ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. My name is Tim Capper, along with my co-host, John Stark. I'm running out of stuff, man. John Stark, I don't want to keep calling Iron Man, or is that going to be your go-to every week?
Every week.
Every week? See, I could drop in an Avengers Infinity War reference here, but spoiler alert for John. And off of Death's Bed, Ben Frentinelli. Ben?
I'm alive, folks. And can I just say before we start, I was just on a radio show as a guest, and unprompted, the host asked me to do my catchphrase from this show.
Are you serious?
Can you really? Believe that? He said, give me the catchphrase, and I was like, I can't imagine he actually means the frat likes that, but he did, and he wants a t-shirt.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's growing.
We only did that one episode.
It's a groundswell.
That's no, hilarious. I think it's been in a few now.
Yeah, no, this is big for my brand.
Wow. What shirt does he want?
He wants the frat likes that.
Oh, okay.
Well, maybe with a thumbs up or something.
I still want a 50-yard dash t-shirt.
Oh, well, I'm working on that. My mass production run. In that order.
Now available at Cafe Perez. We're glad you're back, dude.
It's good to be back.
Yeah, we know you're not caught up completely, but the traction, once again, the traction that we received from the Ari Wolf interview was substantial. Would it be on Facebook or on the Arena Fan message boards? It was another hot topic. And basically, Ben, just to paraphrase, because I know you're not completely caught up yet. To paraphrase Ari, he said, John, please correct me if I'm wrong. It's like,
all right.
This is what I'm saying. I don't care. Basically, I don't care what the others think. This is what I am saying, and don't come at me, bro, unless it doesn't happen. That's paraphrasing right there. We got to get next home game. The Aries there on TV. That I'm there. I should just say, Ari, just say this. Come at me, bro.
That'd be a great sound bite.
Come at me, bro. Ari, come at me, bro. Ben, what is? I know we weren't able to talk to you about it. So before we talk about the big news. Of our head coaching change, which a lot of us were, and a lot of seemed like a lot of Valor fans were hoping for. What's your take on what Ari said originally? I mean, it's obviously you're hoping for it to be, but
yeah,
when it comes to fans though questioning Ari, but basically, what?
I don't want to square up to Ari, but my history of being a fan and media member of this league has led me down many rabbit holes of believing people when they say things like that. Mm-hmm. And very rarely is it true when someone says, we're going to have expansion, we're going to have these cities. It's something that people say every single season. And then for the most part, you get a couple of hits and then not so sure. But I will say, and we did talk about this a couple weeks ago.
Yes, we did.
That, you know, I've been hearing from my sources that this stuff really is happening. I don't know about 8 teams, but I do know that there will be expansion next year, pretty definitively, I would say.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's that far off, and I would not square up with Ari Wolf, and that's a losing man's game.
Yeah. I mean, for me, even though I talked to the commissioner before, I put out a tweet because it was 21 years ago, I think yesterday, that I went to go see the first ever regular season Arena Football League game in Canada. It was played in Ottawa, which I attended, and I'm like, you know, it's been 21 years since that game. It's been 15 damn long years since almost 16 years since the Phantoms' last home game.
16 years.
Yeah, and I said, when can Eastern Canada get one? And I know he referenced Toronto, but I'm liking, I don't think, and I've mentioned this in the message boards, I don't think Toronto is worthy of getting an expansion franchise. But mind you, they have all the steps in place. They have the NBA team. They own the arena, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, I hope it occurs to you. We had a couple questions, too, which we'll talk about because there's some good questions from the fans today about expansion also. So
love the fans.
Yeah.
Can we just give a shout-out to the fans?
All the fans.
All the fans.
Shouts.
Yeah.
Yes. So big news came over the wire. just less than 3 hours ago, maybe about 3 hours ago. There's finally been a head coaching change in the nation's capital, where Coach Kokkinos was relieved of his duties, and they ended up getting Coach Benji McDowell as their interim head coach. John, I'm going to lead with you, because you being the Valor fan, when you heard this news, what was your first reaction?
I wasn't surprised. I've seen other Valor fans calling for this to happen also. And over the last few days, and actually the last 2 or 3 weeks, you and I and even Ben have talked about, you know, what's the deal here in Washington and what's got to change. And then we looked over Coach Kokkinos's past history as a head coach and the third quarter of games as a head coach of the Voodoo and as the Valor, both last season and this season. And there's a long-term trend there.
Huge.
So yeah, it is huge, and I wasn't surprised. How about you guys?
I was not surprised. And from sort of a league perspective, I've had a lot of trouble coping with Washington's failures on the field. I just think that it's painful to watch it. And as sort of a team that should be a premier franchise, that is backed by ownership that is literally running the league, the period of mediocrity needs to end, and this might do it. I mean, it's certainly a spark. It's something needed to change, 100%. And I think it's a great shift, maybe a cultural shift. I don't know what their plans are in terms of whether Benji McDowell is going to be their season-long solution or if Washington is going to do another big hire. And I was saying this before, I think that DC has a propensity to make big hires. I mean, the Shane Austin thing was a big name. The Davila thing was a big name.
Yeah.
They want to pull names out of the AFL hat. And what names are sitting there to pull, I don't know. But we'll see. I think they will make a big move. That's just my early prediction about this. But for now, I see Benji McDowell as a smooth transition, at least for this week, because it's freaking Wednesday.
Yeah, well, Ron James is a huge name that's out there. Just to
He's sitting there. Sitting there.
Yep.
So, yeah, I was very surprised, as they said, you know, very surprised that it hadn't been done sooner. You know, in the Arena Football League, you rarely hear of an in-season head coach being fired. You know, Kokkinos became fired in season, and he was the first head coach fired in season, repeating myself, since week one of 2014, guys, when Derek Stingley was fired in week one from the Pittsburgh Power. It hasn't happened all that often. Now, I never asked you guys this before, but what is your thought when it comes to any sport, not just arena football, firing a coach in season? Do you like the idea? Do you hate the idea? I mean, is it just a matter of just change for change's sake? Ben?
I like it. I think that it can either completely derail a team or be the kick in the ass that they need. And I think that in the AFL, where teams are so moldable, uniquely so, with rosters changing so much, and especially this season, with rosters having almost completely changed for three of the four teams, that's not an impossible place to start. In the AFL, you can start now and still win games in this league. There's four teams. Most teams are filled with all-stars. It's not, if you have an experienced coach coming in, that's not like firing a Major League Baseball coach in the middle of the season and then hiring an outside coach. It's not like that, in my opinion. So I think this has a lot of upside versus if this happened in other sports where it's more like chaotic.
Right, John?
I think Ben, you said that really well. And to add to it, you're not going to see much else happen that's going to make a large change. You've had changes at quarterback. You've had changes at wide receiver throughout the lines on the defensive and offensive side. You've had special team changes. I mean, the roster turnover in Washington since the inception of the team has been kind of drastic. you have the veterans that are still there, like Tolliver, and you know, who else do you have? You have Reese that's been there, and you have Jake Payne and Jimmy Gordon. You have a good percentage of last year, call it a core, but what else can you do when you've already had the roster turnover other than make a coaching change? And when it comes to when is a good time to do it, any time is a good time to do it, especially when you're looking at, what do I have here? 18 games between the last two seasons, and we're at 3-15. So there's unfortunately got to be somebody to blame. And if you trace the numbers, the stats don't usually lie.
Yeah, by the way, you go back and you look at Coach Koch. He's only won a grand total of 6 games in the last 3 seasons.
That is crazy.
So
that's
And he's only had one winning season as a head coach back in 2011, being head coach of the Georgia Force. So, I mean, the dude is 6-29. He's 6-29 over the last 3 seasons. those are Derek Stingley numbers. And I'm not,
I mean, it makes you wonder about the initial hire for sure.
Yeah.
And why they didn't change before this season, I don't quite know either.
Now, from the, oh, by the way, we did try to reach out to get Coach McDowell on. It was a little bit late in the game to do so, but we are planning on having him on very shortly and in the near future. From the press release guys from the Valor head office, we felt that a change in leadership was necessary to put the Valor in the best possible position to win games, said Roger Modi, managing partner of Monumental Sports and Entertainment's Arena Football League teams. Building a team from the ground is no small feat, and we are grateful to Dean for everything he has done for this organization over the last 2 years and wish him the best in his future endeavors, end quote.
That's nice.
So, I mean, what else? what else are you going to say? I mean, you got to be professional about this. I mean, it's at least they don't have the two, you know, the Coach Koch and Coach Smith commercials running on TV this year, because boy, that would be awkward. Would that not be? Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to, you know, McDowell doesn't have that much experience, but I think what is very interesting is that, do you think that he will continue with his other coordinator duties, considering, you know, he came over from Tampa Bay last year and he was, you know, he was defensive coordinator, line coach, special teams coordinator, but Tampa also bolstered one of the top defenses last year. So what's your...
I'd say probably for right now, unless they're promoting a defensive assistant, it's not unheard of in the AFL for a head coach to also be an offensive coordinator. So why not a defensive coordinator?
Right.
It hasn't happened in a while. It used to happen a lot in the pre-2010 era. So I don't know. I think for right now, especially because he's an interim head coach, until they hire a defensive coordinator or move him back to be their defensive coordinator, I would say that's a big thing too. He may go back to being their defensive coordinator if they hire a head coach. So I don't think they're going to hire someone right now unless their plan is to really keep him there.
John, what do you think?
I think he'll stick around. He's been there since at least mid last season, and I've gotten to know him a bit from reporting on the Valor so closely, and he's a great guy, and I think he's a big part of the organization already. And they have their offensive coach as well. So they have two guys that are capable of splitting the duties for the time being. I think James Clark is the offensive line coach. And I don't know. We'll have to see who they bring in as a hire. You know, I wouldn't want to be short staffed down 4 games already.
No.
So I think we're all in agreement that one of the first things that has to occur is that they need to start scoring in the third quarter. I think so. By the way, one of the best one of the best things that, by the way, that came over from the firing itself of Coach Koch was a single one word answer or response from fullback Michael Benson to our tweet going out about Coach getting fired, Coach Kokinos being fired, is finally.
Ooh, wow. Okay. Okay. I see you.
So, yeah. So check your Twitter accounts. Take a screenshot just before it gets deleted.
Yeah. I mean, that's a bridge. Who knows where he might end up in the future, but whatever.
You never know. you never know. Only one game last week, guys. It was a rematch of the week before between DC and Albany. Except it was just in DC. First game of the year. John, I know you were there. Not the same as pomp and circumstance as the inaugural game last year. But what was the atmosphere like? I do know that DC did do a front page. Was it a front page ad on one of the local, one of the free dailies or something like that, where they were promoting tickets for the game and stuff like that for as low as $12 or something like that, right?
Something like that, yeah. Full front page. I forget the name of the paper, but it had a large circulation.
The Valor went full frontal. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, Tim. But that's where you need your catchphrase, Tim. That's why you need one. When you say something like that, you need to either play a drop, like epic or something like that, and
or just do it.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. Just, oh yeah.
Yeah, let me get a rap air horn, please.
Bah, 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 bah. No, I hate that. I even hate that. So, John, what was your take from the opener?
So the atmosphere felt like there was excitement in the air. The crowd was definitely into the game. The game itself on the field looked much better than the week before when I was watching on TV. Warren Smith Jr., quarterback for the Valor, he looked a lot better, more on par with the wide receivers. Albany was looking good too, maybe too good. Pretty smart play.
Right.
I'd like to see better attendance. I think that the losing record trending over from last season definitely isn't going to help that. I thought that also the Capitals playing at the same time didn't help. For the first time ever in the conference finals in 20 years, and a lot of the Valor fan base, Capitals fans, that trended over from the NHL and got interested into arena football.
I mean, I thought the big thing for me was the Valor, Valor playing on the same night.
Yeah.
That to me, that was,
no way to predict that all this was going to play out the way it did, though, in terms of the Capitals making the playoffs.
No, I know. But I mean, it's, they've been bumped once. So, I mean, this is
sure.
This is like getting bumped again, if you think about it. But
yeah.
Overall, I mean, it's if you look at the game, I mean, it's, as I said, I will agree with you that quarterbacking for the Valor was better. But it just seemed that Tommy Grady once again and the entire Empire team was just able to do a lot more. I mean, Hills and then Malachi Jones, I mean, dude.
Yeah.
Monster. Both of them had over 100 yards. I think it's the first time this year. Is that the first time this year we've had two receivers over 100 yards for the same team?
I wouldn't be surprised.
It just, they couldn't be stopped. Again, and once again, as we were mentioning before, DC gets shut out in the third quarter. You know, so it's, I mean, what else did we take away from this game? I mean, obviously, I think one of the big things that it was reported wrong on MSN, and we did go with it, so I will take the fall for that one. But we did get the stats corrected, but Joe Sykes is now, guys, within one sack of tying the AFL record for career sacks.
It's really crazy because he's been sort of in and out of the league. So I was honestly surprised to discover that. I didn't really know he was sneaking up on that. But
well, dude, when you have a season of 16, you have a season of 14.5, and you have a season of 18.5. Yeah. So he should. I mean, if he goes at his current pace, and he's done two for the past 3 weeks, he should.
Yeah,
he should surpass that number and break six and surpass him as the number one. Any other takeaways that you took from this game, guys?
I was personally very impressed with Warren Smith. He was not only, I thought, you know, a lot more refined, but also just extremely fun to watch. As like an arena football quarterback, he's just got the skill set that just naturally makes him exciting. Like the rushing, the fumbling the ball, you know, right, in the red zone to try to, you know, cheat a touchdown. Just the way his playing style is very entertaining. It was really weird to see Shane Austin on the bench, but I guess he had just been signed. I don't know what their plan is for Austin. I guess we'll find that out this week, but I thought it was fun to watch him out there, and I hope he gets another week. And man, Tommy Grady is throwing dimes out there. Yeah, he looks so much. He's just getting better every week. Right? Yeah, it's unreal. Yeah. Some of his passes, and that's really exciting to see, because you know we didn't quite know what we were getting going into this season. You know, in week one, he, you know, didn't look in peak form, and he had the injury, and just to see him like throwing like that is really, that's great for the league.
Yeah, especially after him getting the scare, you know, in week one in all the. Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. And it's not necessarily just, you know, the Joe Hill show, even though he did extend his league record to 84 straight games, consecutive games with a receiving touchdown. It just seems that the league is able to come up with these new wide receiver stars.
Yeah. Malachi Jones is unreal.
Yeah.
I mean, you put the ball in his hands on a screen and he could score from anywhere. He's unbelievable. I think he's the breakout player in the league this year for sure.
So far, I mean, Greg Carr was activated. He was back. He got himself a touchdown. Colin Taylor, you know, got it back on the board with a touchdown. As I said, there's just so much star power on all these teams this year. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you know, DC alone.
The big three.
Four touchdowns. five touchdowns of four different receivers. And it's very rare for Rod Windsor not to score a touchdown.
I know.
Even though they tried.
Yeah, they did.
There was an attempt.
So now one thing I wanted to ask you guys, though, I mean, for all those Empire fans who are like, you know, look at us now. You know, we're now second, you know, we're a game out of first place. We got Philadelphia coming up next. Should Empire fans get overhyped considering that their two games have been versus the Washington Valor?
That's a good question. I hope that it's not true that the only reason they look so powerful is because they're playing the Valor. But I don't know. I mean, this could be just a momentum push that they need. And I can't wait to see whether they're able to pick this up from where they left off against the Brigade in Seoul. But it's a very valid question. The Valor are not a strong opponent right now. So it's hard to say. But they look like they have such an attitude out there. And you can see, independent of defensive weaknesses, how strong the Empire are on offense. And also, even in previous losses, you saw how great their defense was. And things slipped by, and there were circumstantial things that led to losses. But I think they're clearly stacked. So I think it bodes well for the rest of their season.
Yeah, they are a machine on the field. And Coach Keefe is, he's always up in the play, and he is hype.
He's fired up
every time. I love it too. I think that, you know, these games were against the Valor. I think the Valor played a better game this last weekend, and that Albany still stayed ahead and still looked like they were in control of the game. I think Baltimore and Philly are better teams than Washington, and I think we all agree on that. And I think Albany now has the skill set, and I really want to say everything clicking to go up against Baltimore and Philly and get a W.
Yeah.
It is. I think it just showed, you know, week one was sort of a downer versus Philadelphia. Then you saw what they did, though, the next couple of weeks. I mean, they played Baltimore really well. They really did. And if it wasn't four, you know, one, you know, a fumble.
Yeah.
They may easily be 3-1. So we will see. I've said, be optimistic, Empire fans. You have a great team. The thing is, so this week versus Philadelphia came off of a stinker 2 weeks ago. So
a big stinker.
You got to see who shows up.
And a week of rest now. Yeah.
Yeah. Which Philadelphia Soul team shows up. Now, mind you, and we'll get into this later, they were also bolstered by picking up Jake Metz. But we'll talk about that. So DC also, and it was something that was promoted somewhat, and I didn't know about it, but I didn't until I saw, I saw the broadcast, and I think for me, it's, I've seen this angle before, and yeah. I've seen everything that they've done on Monumental when it comes to broadcasting the games. But then seeing that this, their thing that they've dubbed the RoboCam, which is a camera that is up, I guess it's attached to the scoreboard.
Yeah.
Where it does make the Arena League game look like, can we say it's like the NFL's eye in the, not really, but it's kind of like the NFL's eye in the sky.
So, yeah, it is. I mean, it's their equivalent of SkyCam.
Yeah, it's aerial. Yeah.
But obviously it's locked down compared to what it is in the NFL.
But, yeah.
You know, it's funny. I watched this and I remember watching the, you know, NBC was experimenting. I think it was the first time. I think it was Steelers Titans, I think, where it was most of the game was shot from the SkyCam.
Yeah.
And I hated it. I hate
Well, their argument there and the reason they did it was they thought, hey, kids these days, they're playing Madden in their living room. Yeah. And that's the angle they're getting used to seeing these games. And it's kind of I liked watching games that weren't Denver Broncos games because it was like kind of fun to experience that.
Right.
But then when the Broncos had one, I was like, OK, I just want the regular angle. Like
that was me.
It's weird because the play is always going away from the camera. So that's the biggest downfall with SkyCam always. And that's their argument for not implementing it full time. It's that no matter what, you're never going to have a play coming toward the camera. It's always going to be moving away from it. And the camera's always going to be following the action rather than being alongside the action. So it was interesting to see it implemented in this game.
But I thought it came off differently, though. And that's
it was. It was definitely different.
Yeah. I mean,
I thought it a little weird.
Did you?
Yeah, I thought there were some plays where it really hit, and it was like, whoa, they followed that play perfectly, and you really could understand what was going on in the play.
Some of the arcing touchdowns.
Cool angle. Yes. But then there were some plays where it was mostly just disorienting and sort of hard to follow. And, you know, it was hit or miss for me. I think it was interesting perspective, but it would be a weird primary angle, obviously.
I think it's like how they have finally, I think they've come to a happy medium when it comes to using the ref cam.
Yeah, I'm still not. I think these on-field cameras are a good idea. Well, first of all, they're introducing the helmet cam, which
just
that's
about
big
to bring that up. I'm glad.
Yeah,
you did.
That's exciting.
Yeah, that's the most exciting out of the three. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. We'll get to this. First, John, what did you think of RoboCam? I really want to talk about that. John, what do you think of the RoboCam?
To what extent? What are we achieving here? What is the means to it? Like, no, really, really, though, what benefit other than a new perspective does this promote to the game?
Well, I'm just one thing I'm worried about the most, though, is we're going to watch a game like that the entire time, I'm afraid of getting carpal tunnel.
Well, we're not going to do that.
Because I'm going to be I'm going to be pushing the X button on my remote control the entire time. It's like, pass, pass, pass. And it won't, you know, but it's... It's a good point.
Okay.
It you make a good point though, because I think in the social media promo, did they talk about it also being similar for, you know, for those who play Madden, da 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 da. I had to go back and check the tweet itself. I think they need to have a happy medium to this because I enjoy. And it seems stationary, at least only on MSN broadcast, is the goal line cam, which was needed
necessary
for so long. I think it's just a matter of, you know, it's a great angle for some of the stuff, and I will admit, and could it be, and you're talking about what could it be used for, John? What about some replay challenges? You might be able to use it
for coaching,
a great angle, especially if it's right there. Because
Tim, you know when I wish we had that camera?
About every time ever.
The 2008 playoffs.
Oh, you mean the goal line cam?
New York Dragons. Larry Bracken stretching out his hand and fumbling it into the end zone.
Yeah, okay. Okay, and I'm glad you brought that up because the RoboCam was used, and if I'm not mistaken, it was used actually in an instant replay. And it was on the Joe Hill's two-point attempt.
Yeah.
Now, I understand what the rules are. It needs to be conclusive. And in this case, yes, you saw Joe Hill's arm touch the line, even with a RoboCam, because I think that was probably the best angle. But the thing is, though, where was the ball?
Yeah, the RoboCam was sort of deceptive even there.
It was. But I think, you know what? I agree with the call. They didn't have the angle, so the call stood. That's what they called, right? No, they called it a touchdown.
No, they called it a two-point.
Yeah. So they got it. In my opinion, they got it wrong.
Yeah.
Because it has to be conclusive.
Right.
So, I mean, Johnny, do bring up a good point. Well, what else can it be used for? I mean, the odd angle, looking at the use. I said, watching some of the touchdowns was amazing.
Yeah.
I think wasn't the Malachi Jones touchdown in the corner amazing?
So, I mean, it's weird. It's weird as an in. Play angle, like that's the thing. It's a cool replay angle.
Yes,
it's a weird thing to watch during the play. It's
which I don't think they used it much though. They did
cut to it a surprising amount. I was surprised how much they used it for live game angle.
Yeah, they bounced around the different camera angles quite a bit during the broadcast.
It was bleeding edge.
Bleeding edge. Rip out your eyes, technology. You brought. Yes.
There it is.
So you brought up the helmet cam, and they did announce that also, that they're going to be bringing this up. And my first comment, because I know Coffee Jones made a mention of it on Twitter, my first comment was, let's see how much different it is from the USFL helmet cam and the Shut Vision helmet cam, which, by the way, was arena football.
Yeah.
Before I make my decision. Because I guess I've been around football so long that I've seen it done. I want to know how it's going to be different. So I'm skeptical about that right now.
I think a big part of it is stabilization. Like when you see the way GoPro cameras are used in football helmets,
yeah,
it's actually very cool. Yeah. But then when you see a ref helmet cam, it looks like nuts. I mean, it's not stabilized. It looks like terrible quality. It's the quality right now. I mean, the technology exists to make that good, but whether it can be safe is really the question.
Do GoPros have OIS?
No. Well, you mean stabilization?
Yeah.
Well, no, but they do now, and it's like software stabilization. The actual camera isn't stabilized, okay. But a lot of what makes GoPro look so stable is like the context. So if you see part of the helmet, the shot looks stable because your point of reference is like the face mask or something.
Right.
And if this camera is right in the front of the helmet and you have no context, it may just look crazy shaky. But seeing the first time it gets hit is going to be interesting.
That too.
Because where are they supposed to be placing it? On the bumper?
It's on the crown of the helmet. Or not the crown, sorry. The very front, like the bumper.
Wow. As I said, I'm reserving judgment. Because as I said, I saw Shut Vision, and Shut Vision, even though it wasn't live, to me it was sort of meh. You know? John,
I think if we can see it with some sort of image stabilization, and if we can see it in 720p or 1080 or higher, which I don't have hopes for, yeah. I think then we may get a good product when we're talking about helmet cams.
Just feel that has been done so many damn times that they're just trying to reinvent the wheel on this.
I mean, I like that the AFL. I think the AFL should and has been in the past a playground for technology on the field.
Yeah,
and I think that it's nice to see. I don't know whether it's going to be good. I don't think the current innovations with hat cams and helmet cams that have been currently implemented are good. I don't think they're good, but I like that the AFL is being used to try this stuff out. And, you know, it's always been a good use of the AFL, like their structure.
But let me ask you guys this. Anything that where we have been, the AFL has been guinea pigs for technology's sake, can you think of something that's become mainstream?
That's a great question. I think that most of the big things that have been done for the AFL have not taken at all in the NFL.
Right.
And certainly referees don't want to be wearing helmets, and that didn't work out. And even the AFL had to ditch that. I am curious, though, and I think that NBC in their broadcast did some experimental things that they ended up using in the NFL. But as far as on-field stuff, I don't think anything's taken.
I don't think so either. And I know we joked about, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, we talked about drones and stuff like that. I mean, I don't want to see that.
I want to see drones.
No. I love it. That's indoor football. That's not arena football. I mean, John, I mean, my thought is you have the angles in video games where you can be right in the cockpit, you know, like racing games. I don't think they have a quarterback cam view in Madden. I don't think. I haven't played Madden in a few years, but I don't think they do. Is this advantage point, John, really suited for football at all?
It's hard to say. I don't have enough recent memory of helmet cam being used in football to really have a strong opinion on that.
Right.
And I'm excited to see how it looks, but I don't have a lot of hope for the quality.
I have an idea.
Yeah.
This is a light bulb over the head idea.
Go on.
Okay, so virtual reality is big right now. What if they were able to push this helmet cam technology to the point where somehow they were able to create a 360-degree angle? Imagine putting on a VR headset and just being the quarterback for the whole game.
That would be actually pretty effing cool.
Okay, the frat likes that.
No, that's actually a pretty cool idea.
That is a pretty cool idea.
Hopefully the higher-ups are listening, and I got to trademark this or something.
I was about copyrighted. To say, you need to do some IP work on this real quickly.
Yeah, I'm running to my local government office after this.
I know that there have been some stuff that has been used a while ago. The CBC up here, the Canadian Broadcasting Company, for hockey, what they used to do is they used to put a camera up on the boards, and it was on a gimbal, and it was basically a 360-degree camera, so you could follow the angles. And I think they do use it somewhat still, like for some of the, you know, Winter Classics, for the Heritage Classics, and for the outdoor, for the Stadium Series.
Yeah,
they do. They do.
Games. That could be an interesting, you know, maybe pair that up with, as you said, you know, maybe they are looking at VR, and this is just a test. They just don't want to say it's, you know, AFL VR. That would be.
We scooped them.
That would be
we
cool.
Scooped them.
That really would be cool. Now that I think about that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a draw. I mean they're trying to come up with.
Well, you know how Ted Leonsis and Monumental, they're all into this, you know, the OTT stuff.
Yeah.
And all the stuff they're pushing for the third and fourth channels for streaming. Could you see this? Monumental coming out with has Monumental ever done anything with VR? Because you know what? You actually may be onto something here, Ben.
This might be big. I may have cracked it.
You may be onto something, because if Monumental's done VR before, then maybe there is a possibility.
Yeah, okay. Very sneaky.
Or even, wouldn't it be cool, a 360 view on YouTube, watching it that way?
Yeah, it'd be incredible. I mean, at least as like a bonus feature.
That would be
something you could, you know, bring on your second screen experience.
They do have VR TV. It actually is a thing.
Yeah.
Most curious.
I can only imagine what that costs. But, yeah.
It doesn't cost a lot. That's where we're at now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, the television for sure. But the actual technology is now so widely produced that it's pretty inexpensive to get 360-degree cameras now. So I could see this definitely being implemented in a live broadcast. I mean, teams do this all the time in short social media live videos and stuff like that. So
Right. Why
not for a live broadcast? We'll see.
I mean, even 360 cams are today. They do pretty well. They're pretty seamless. They, you know.
Yeah, they're good.
That's, dude, you may be onto something. Before this goes live, you better go.
You know, 2 hours to break into the White Plains New York Department office and raise some heck.
Yeah. Don't forget that Arena Fan is on multiple social channels. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are on Instagram. We are on Periscope. Don't do it all that often, but we are on Periscope. It is all / Arena Fan, except for Instagram, which is Arena Fan Online. And if there are any questions like we did this week when it comes to fan questions or any concerns or comments or suggestions for the show, you can email me on behalf of Ben, for Ben or for John, at tim.capper@arenafan.com. Now, I'm not... I wanted to get one of my friends on here who's really into betting, but I know we've been sort of looking at it this year, and I'd forgotten that this was being done. But big news, and I'm sure I'm sure Ted Leonsis was happy, and all the others who do betting, that the Supreme Court of the United States actually voted to legalize betting. Now, it's not it's a vote in a lump sum for everybody in the U.S. Think of it sort of like how pot is being dealt with, how pot is being dealt with in the U.S. right now. There may be certain stipulations from state to state.
Yeah.
But I think one of the big ones now that's really getting into it is New Jersey, if I'm not mistaken. That New Jersey, I think, is going to be one of the first states to really jump on board when it comes to legalized betting. And obviously with the AFL partnering up with VSiN and partnering up with DraftKings, what's your take on your guys? As I said, none of us are bettors. We really aren't bettors. But when it comes to this type of thing and sports in general, is this going to be a positive, or do you see something bad coming out of this?
I see the bad thing is John becomes addicted to gambling. But I think it's only a positive for the AFL for sure. I mean, as I've said a bunch of times, anything that brings fans in to this game, whether it's through sports betting or otherwise, is great for the league. More eyes, more people interested. People bet on anything. They bet on weird things. And the AFL is just another playground for sports betting. And with the DraftKings partnership, I mean, this is literally the best thing that could have happened for the AFL. And I have a feeling they sort of knew this was coming.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think it's a great thing. I don't really know what any downsides could be to this. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I think that's a great thing, too. It's going to draw new fans. I've seen on some message boards and posts randomly on the internet, people talking about how this is a really great niche market to get into in terms of sports betting. So you'll have new fans watching the game or betting on the game. I read at least 18 states are already introducing legislation to pass laws. So this becomes legal for the first time since, I think, like 1992. And Tim, you're right. You know, New Jersey mm-hmm. is the first. I think this is where the ruling was taking place. So, like almost anything in life, it's a double-edged sword. You're going to have people that have their reservations about what it's going to do to the league and what it's going to do to the country. They're talking at least a $50 billion industry, maybe even up to upwards of $400 billion a year.
Oh, my God.
I know.
That's a lot of scratch.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, see?
So,
what, did we go back to the 30s?
Hey, at least 1992. At least 1992.
Yeah, say the horses.
They are going to bet on those horses.
They're going to bet on those ponies.
So, I think it could be a good thing for arena football.
Now, what I find is interesting is we know Mark Cuban is huge into technology. And Mark Cuban, when this came about, said, I think everybody who owns a top four professional sports team just basically saw the value of their team double at least.
Yeah.
Which is even bonkers considering what the Carolina Panthers just sold.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Did you hear about this, John?
I think I did, but I didn't read up on it.
Carolina Panthers, I know this is completely off topic, but Carolina Panthers were just sold for $220 billion.
That's a lot of scratch.
Becoming the highest price ever for a sports team in North America. And what's even stupider, guys, is the dude who's buying the team is paying $200 million in cash. I mean, like, oh my God.
The guy lying around.
And he's an investment banker. He's an investment. So... also, Cuban goes, it could finally become fun to go to a baseball game again.
Oh,
ouch.
He goes, you know, all that downtime.
Mark, I'm out.
A basketball game, football. It's easy to see how you'll have fun at the arena, at the stadium, and while you're watching it. Whether it's online, on traditional TV, I think this is something that benefits everybody. So it's... I mean, I do know that, you know, there have been arena football lines as long as we've known. So, as I said, people will bet on anything. And like every week, guys, we do have some questions to us this week from the fans. We want to thank everybody who takes time out to send us the questions either via email or by social media when we do ask for them before we do the taping of the show. First question comes to us from Brandon Rush via Twitter. And he's asking us, guys, which is more likely to return to the AFL, Iron Man striped football or 16 teams?
This is such a good question.
And it may be tongue-in-cheek a little bit, too. I get it. You know,
I mean, Brandon's a cheeky guy. You know, he was my narrator for 50-yard dash.
Yes, I know he was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question, though, even if it's tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
I would love to see the striped footballs come back. I think in of all the things that could come back, I think in terms of branding, that was a great thing for the league. First of all, I would love to see the blonde football come back. I don't know. Tim, what is your connection to the blonde football? Are you a fan?
I was actually a fan of the original two-tone.
Yeah.
In the old days. I love the two-tone. Yeah. I was okay with the blonde. I mean, that was the NBC days, and then they changed it when NBC bid adieu to the league. So, oh, by the way, that means adieu means goodbye. Sorry.
Oh, thanks for translating.
Yeah, I forgot to turn on my Google Translate. But I was, you know, the stripe, meh.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it was okay. It was okay. I don't, you know, I don't know what had less meaning, the stripe or the little cross at the front of the ball, you know.
The theory with the blonde ball was that because it's an indoor game, it's more visible on television. So I like the explanation of the ball.
I mean,
I thought it was a better collector's item for fans in the stands. Right now, the ball is so boring to me.
I mean, indoor football, they seem like everybody uses at least one white panel ball.
Yeah, I don't like the white panel. I think it makes it look like it's a toy. Or, maybe it's just because I grew up with the blonde ball. I don't think it looks like that.
Yeah,
but I was,
yeah. Or a signature ball, you know, where you get the players to sign it.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Now, John, I don't know how far you go back when it comes with game balls, but, I mean, do you really care if they bring back the stripes? Or, I mean, which of those three do you think would make a return over any of the others?
I do like the blonde ball, and I prefer that over the stripe. And I noticed some of the other indoor leagues use different balls of different variations and colors. And I do agree. I think it might be a little more visible on TV being a lighter color since it's indoors. I'm indifferent for the most part.
I mean, so does that mean that none of you guys think that the league will ever get back up to 18 teams? Or do you think it – because remember, the big thing was – you know, oh, we're going to finally reach that 20-team plateau. Well, that plateau has, you know...
fallen off into the sea?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, it seems that the goal of 20 teams has been blowing more smoke than the volcano in Hawaii.
Oh!
God, that was well brought up. I mean, but... I don't know. 2018, I think we need to go slow. I mean, Iron Man, I don't think... Iron Man has always been a part of the AFL, whether it's been official or not, because we have had players play Iron Man football. Not having an Iron Man of the Game award doesn't mean that you have guys playing both ways.
Yeah, we see Lamarck Brown from Baltimore doing that this season.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's in part, what is the league's brand? Right now... When the Iron Man rule was sort of taken away, it was in the era when you had some NFL owners in the AFL that really wanted to make it a more professional product that could port players into the NFL.
Right.
And there was a lot of things put in place to make the AFL a little bit more accessible and not as weird. But as we drift into this new era, we're so far beyond that point. I could see the league again embracing it as something just to draw people in, you know, as a thing you say, oh, we got Iron Man football. You know, you got guys playing offense and defense. That's an exciting branding thing. And so it really depends on how the league wants to angle itself. And Iron Man football does shorten careers. It puts a lot of stress on players. In some ways, it limits talent because you need people that can do both, and there's not a lot of those. So I think I could see the league in its current form going back to that. I would like to see it.
I don't think, I mean, technically, I think guys play Iron Man football anyways. You got a lot of guys. I mean, didn't Mishai Jones play on special teams this week? I mean, technically, isn't that Iron Man?
No, I mean, it happens, and like everyone plays on special teams, but as a mission statement for the league, it's a much different thing where rosters are smaller and you have to, and you have a player that is literally an offensive specialist that is almost your DH. I mean, that was such a different vibe. And I'd be curious to go back to that. I would be a fan of it.
I think it would be cool. I mean, I really think 18 teams is, I don't think it's a pipe dream, but I think that we need to see, we've heard it all before. Anybody who's been following the league for such a long time knows that we've reached our pinnacle, and we've just headed just down the other direction off the mountain. So I don't know. I think you have a better shot at one of those two coming back before we get to 18 teams. If
I agree.
I mean, John, anyone, either or neither? I mean, besides the stripe ball?
I think the league can grow and get back to that point eventually with the proper leadership. But hoping for 8 right now, I think, is what everyone should be focused on hoping for. And Iron Man, in terms of what Ben was saying, it's not a mission statement. And we do see guys, like I said, Lamarck and other guys out there on the field playing both sides of the ball. But it would shorten careers and it would tire more guys out. And with the limitations of the roster size and all of that, it's probably not going to be a staple in the league in the near future.
And I think one last thing about the 18 teams concept is that happened at a time when the league was basing their entire survival on receiving expansion money as a means to stay in business.
Right.
And I think the league philosophically, business-wise, is beyond that point. Well, I don't think we're going to see a year where a bunch of random people are owning teams. You know, they're gunning for different kinds of ownership now. And if the AFL's league leadership continues with this philosophy, it's really hard to get to 18 teams. That makes it so much harder. It's not just that you don't only need interest, you need the right interest. And that's going to take decades if that ever happens. So I'd say Iron Man's more likely at this point.
So is it fair to say that right now that the Arena League will continue to be a Northeast league until, for all we know, it could be maybe an East Coast league, depending on what happens when, you know, for expansion, you know, if Tampa comes back, if Orlando comes back, as an example.
Yeah, unless there's a merger, which could always happen. I know it sounds insane, but if there's some sort of indoor football league merger or an NAL merger at some point, or there's one of those leagues folds and there's an influx of those teams, I could see Midwest getting really strong if something like that were to happen. But Western going way west, that's maybe in the history books for now.
Yeah, it seems like for now the East Coast seems to be on their radar and their focus.
Because there seem to be more than enough owners within the Northeast that are hockey-related, and basketball-related. Speaking of more teams, the second question came to us from Scott Weinberg, and he goes, if in fact we have 8 teams or more next year, will the league expand the schedule to at least 14 regular season games?
Yeah, I think definitely.
I
think without question. I think this schedule is sort of an emergency schedule. You have 4 teams, and it's something you had to do. But if we get back to 8 teams, there's no question financially you have to go back to a normal regular season.
I think so. Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I'm trying to do the quick math on what it would be, because I'm trying to go back to, in league history, when we had 8 teams, how many games did we actually play?
In 2016, it was 16 regular season games.
Right, which was too many.
Yeah, maybe.
It's
too many when their stakes are not high. I think the 12-game season this year is not only good for the fact that teams don't just repeat every week, but also just you just have limited competition. I mean, with 8 teams, it was a little ridiculous when so many teams made the playoffs.
Yes.
That, it just makes the regular season meaningless in a way. And so I like the shorter season this year, but I think if the AFL wants to return to normalcy, and if a new ownership coming in, the AFL needs to be an attractive financial product, and more games means more money. And if they feel they can sell those seats, then yeah, they'll definitely go back to at least 16 games.
And I think his reasoning to that, because if you have 8 teams, 14, 2 per team, That's 14. That's at least 14.
Yeah.
Unless you dare to go 16 again. It depends on two, if they break them up back into two divisions, which I think I would think that they would. I would think that they would break it up back up into two divisions. That way, if you do that, you play six games or more versus your own division, and then you play outside of the other division for the remaining team, for the remaining games.
I think it's also going to be based off of what they decide to do with the playoff format going forward.
Yeah, because you could, if you have four per, you can play nine games within your own division, three per team, and then you can play the rest versus the other division.
That's some solid math.
Does that make sense there? Nine. Then you have six games left. Yeah.
Tim Capper is now doing live math.
Yep. I think they would have to, and I agree. Playoffs would have to be modified. I only see this year as a one-off. That would be very interesting to do a two-game series with eight teams, depending on how many teams made the playoffs. But yes, I think overall, I think we're in agreement, eh, guys, that yes, you do need to. You would have to increase the amount of games that we play.
Yeah.
So, last question comes to us from the Arena Fan message boards, and he goes by Target Toad. I'm sure everybody knows. If you follow the boards, you know who he is. And no, I'm quick caveat, I did not prompt him on this one.
Okay.
I did not prompt him. He goes, what would it realistically take for the AFL to return to Canada?
I did not prompt him to ask that question.
But he also did include a good, bad, ugly, which we're going to try to come up with here in a couple of minutes.
Tim, here's your moment.
Yeah, this is your moment, Tim.
I've always said,
take it away.
I know we're talking about Toronto earlier, but I think it needs to follow the exact same mantra that's occurring right now. I think you need, and my thought was, and anybody who read the message board, you'll have seen this, so I'm sorry if you've seen it already. I think if you want to stay within the Northeastern type of league that we currently are, and to be able to stay within the, you know, how the league is promoting, you know, their all league pass, where you have to include Montreal, Ottawa, and Quebec City at least, because they're all within driving distance. Montreal is 4 hours from Albany, and Ottawa is another 2 hours from there. Now, Quebec City is the outlier, yes, but the pluses about Ottawa and Montreal is that they have NHL teams and they own their buildings. So that was my thought. I think it's, you need to stick with the exact same thing.
So are you suggesting a Canadian division?
No. No,
okay.
No. In order for that to, no, even if they do go out west, you know, getting teams from Calgary and Edmonton, which would be great because that's a rivalry thing. But you need more teams out there.
Sure.
So, yeah. I'm just trying to be realistic where if you want to stay with how the current league is set up, where you can drive short distances, promoting rivalries, at least Ottawa, Montreal. And again, I don't think Toronto should ever have a team again. I don't think they should. So, yeah, that's really what it is. I think it's basically what everybody else is when it comes to the ownership. It has to be done right. It has to be done right. So
what did TT have to say about the good, bad, and uglies?
TT said his good, bad, and ugly. I love how he made the difference, by the way, between good and between bad and bad. His good was attendance in DC, 9K going head to head with the Capitals is impressive, especially when compared to the 1-3K some on the boards predicted in at Baltimore. Guys, Ben, you're good.
My good is that my boy Jake Metz, he's back.
Yes.
That was so exciting. I mean, this guy was, you know, nearly made the Eagles roster and then nearly made the Bills roster. He played in all four of their preseason games last year. And I was talking to him today. He said the soul just reached out like a cold call and said, you want to come back? And he said, yes. And so he is a beast. Mm-hmm. And the soul getting him back is just another piece to a puzzle that's already an incredible puzzle.
It'll make for an interesting game versus Albany this week.
Yes, it that. Will. Yeah. And so I'm pumped about that. That's a definite good.
My good would go to Mishai Jones. Just the dude is coming in his own. He's becoming an AFL star. I got to imagine that with CFL training camps, et cetera, starting up, even the NFL, that the dude may get it. He may get a look, even if it's a tryout. He may get a look. So don't be surprised if you see him go on Olex or on league suspension for 1 weekend. So yeah, he's my good. I like to see this when these guys come out of the league like this and make a name for themselves. John?
That's actually my good too. Malachi. Yeah, Malachi Jones. I think we're seeing an emerging rookie of the year. He's every game he's got an increase in targets, yards, and touchdowns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben, you're bad or bad?
My bad is unfortunately not bad. It's actually bad. And I would say it's onside kicks. I love Kenny Spencer and I get what the Empire are trying to do, but their onside kicks are just consistently putting them in peril. And I don't like the onside kick obsession that the AFL has taken on. And I don't think anyone likes it. As we've talked about before, everyone just has to play the game that's now been set up where everyone has to do it. But I hope that goes away at some point. So that's my bad.
John?
My bad of the week would be Valor in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was sitting there too, but...
Yeah, well, bad I mean, the, it is, it's one of the two, especially because they were at the goal line within, 5 to 7 yards and lost the ball on fourth down right at the end of the third where they could have scored. So that's my bad.
For TT's, he goes, his is a bad. It's TT, speaking of TT Tolliver, scoring 2 touchdowns in the first. He goes, the dude is 41 years old and he's running with guys half his age.
Yeah.
Spec.
You're bad, Tim?
My bad, I think it actually was going to go once again, continued third quarter woes for DC. After you and I went and Ben went through all the different stats that has happened to DC, especially under Coach Koch, it's embarrassing. It really is, and that's probably one of the bigger reasons besides quarterbacks why this team has just been so garbage. For Turkotoad's ugly, he goes the Valor's third quarter. Hey, Valor's third quarter offense.
Wow. Okay.
What happens to them coming out of the locker room? Does Koch deflate his guys? My ugly, and it's on us too. My ugly is with the MSN broadcast team saying that. Saying that the league record had been broken this past week for sacks when it actually hadn't. And again, it was on us. On us, too, where we tweeted it thinking it was a league missive. The information went from the league to them to announce it. So that's the ugly. My thing is you need to get the stats correct before you say it's even sure. I mean, people need to remember that. Everything from the league and the league book is official. I'll leave it at that. John, you're ugly.
I'm ugly. I'm with Target.
It's okay.
Wah, wah, wah. I'm with Target Toad. Valor struggling in the third quarter.
Wait, how do you go with bad and ugly for the same exact thing?
Well, we're doing how bad it is. That is how bad it is.
Yeah,
and
that gets a special place in history.
It does because of the 3-15 record under Coach Cocaina. So that's my hybrid ugly.
That's your bugly.
There we go.
Okay. Ben, last of the week.
I thought it was funny that you mentioned that broadcast error because my ugly is the entire broadcast.
Okay.
I love MSN's enthusiasm. I love, in theory, everything they're doing. John, do you know the name of their play-by-play commentator?
The play-by-play this last week is someone I'm unfamiliar with and had not seen broadcast before.
So, again, I don't like throwing people under the bus, but there was misidentification of players was across the board probably five times a drive. A player was called by the wrong name. It was crazy. I mean, it was something that a casual viewer maybe wouldn't have noticed.
Right.
But, you know, even when a player was injured and laying on the field for like 5 minutes, they would say the wrong player's name for like 5 minutes. And I just thought that was crazy. A lot of the graphics were misspelled in sort of funny ways.
Oh,
I mean, the whole thing was funny for me. Like, I was laughing, but I don't know that that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's not a good product, right?
No. When you've identified their receivers as the big three, I mean, you get a spell check or something. I don't know. I mean, again, I love MSN, but that wasn't maybe their best showing.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And I went to go back to see who oh, yeah, it was going to see who the guy was. Who the guy was on the broadcast.
We got a second one.
Almost,
but I don't think the game is the game there. Actually, I should have. You know what? You know what should have been the bad was the week was Joe Hill's playing rock, paper, scissors.
That's classic.
Total? I'm probably going
to. I should have said that.
Not here today.
I should have said that. No, this isn't the game.
When you guys play rock, paper, scissors, do you say rock, paper, scissors says shoot, or do you go rock, paper, scissors, shoot?
I go rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
I've
played both variations.
Okay. I don't know whether it's like a Northeast thing. I have arguments with everyone about it, but I digress.
But then again, if you play the Big Bang Theory version, it's rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock.
My gosh. Are we making Big Bang Theory references now?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we are.
Okay. We'll save this for off air.
Okay. thanks guys again for the questions. You're more than welcome to send them to us each week, and we will take your good, bad, and uglies also, because it gives us a vibe of what everybody is thinking and what the fans are thinking about the AFL each week. Two games back to the regular schedules, guys. No more bye weeks for the AFL, and the first game, we have a doubleheader this week on Saturday. It's almost a date. God, it's like a ball game, a day night doubleheader type of thing. DC plays home to the Baltimore Brigade in the first game of the Benji McDowell interim era for the Washington Valor. And the game will be on AFL Now, Facebook Watch, and the Monumental Sports Network. Going into the game, guys, just to at least let you know that currently the Baltimore Brigade are favored by 9.5 points with an over-under of 96.5.
Not surprising.
Now, 9.5 points, I think that's reasonable. I think it's reasonable. I think, guys, I mean, is there any way that you can see DC making a game of this thing between between these teams? I mean, obviously, the main thing that has to occur is that DC, A, needs it to score in the third, and B, needs to score in the third. What's very surprising, actually, is that the Valor leads the all-time series 3-2.
Wow.
And Washington has won their last two games at home. Washington has won their last two games at home versus Baltimore. So is there any way? I mean, do we see a change at quarterback? You know what? Having a new head coach, we might see a change at quarterback, but the question is which one of the three?
Yeah. It's a bit odd that they have three on the roster. We got Josh Portis, we got Shane Austin, we got Warren Smith Jr. I think it would be weird not to see Shane Austin this week. I think Warren Smith, despite having a entertaining week and showed a lot of promise, it's just strange. You've just signed this guy essentially to replace your star, and then for him to be benched 2 weeks in a row would be weird. Mm-hmm. And then you've got a new head coach. There's an argument to be made that Warren Smith should start when you've just replaced your coach, because you want some normalcy going back to back weeks.
Right.
Or you're just blowing this thing up and trying to really do a reboot. So I think it would be interesting to see Austin out there. There's really no telling how he's going to perform, but it's possible he just has like an electric performance and Washington wins. But obviously Baltimore is the safer bet here.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. I know you follow the Valor quite a bit. Do you agree with what Ben says? I mean, or is it something else where some other variable that we don't know about where you think that the Valor would have a chance to at least make this a competitive game?
I think if we can see scoring in the third, we'll see a competitive game. If we spent the time to look at all of the quarters going back for the last 18 games, they're competitive in most other quarters they've played, it's just failing to score more than 9 or 7 points or, you know, any points at all in the third. So with enough points in the third, we could have a lot of these games either close to being a tie or a win. Some games last year were lost by 1, 2, or 4 points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and, over the past 2 years, DC has scored 10 points or more, well, 12 points or more, 4 times. 12, 13, 13, and 14. Remember, they scored 14 in the third quarter in the first game of the year this year, but they still lost. But, you know, to me, what's going to be interesting is the Baltimore defense, because they've come off, you know, they can't, sure, they've had a week off, but holding the high-powered offense of the Philadelphia Soul to 21 points 2 weeks ago.
Impressive.
Yeah. So it makes me wonder. I said, I think a lot of things are going to have to go right for Washington to stay in this game.
You know, I'm going to agree with that too. And I think that what's not being talked about is Washington losing Nick Addison at cornerback.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's actually pretty huge. And I think Quay Cox is on the injured reserve now too.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's not great for keeping the football out of the end zone.
No, that's true. The game is at 3 p.m. on Saturday. At 6 p.m., Albany travels to play the Philadelphia Soul. The game will be on CBS Sports Network. First time that these two teams met was the Albany's first ever game, and Philadelphia shellacked them, beat them by 21 points. But this is a different Empire team. It's a team that's been able to gel. Since then, they have Joe Hills. You know, a lot of the other wide receivers are coming into their own. What's your thought on this one here, Ben? I mean, it's
I want to stay undefeated this season with my picks. So
how are you?
Yeah, because you know I plan to not get a single one of these games wrong, and I think I want to make the controversial Albany pick here. I want to see them, you know, really make a statement in this game. I think they're primed. If ever they're primed to do that, it's right now. And but I don't know. With the addition of Metz, Philadelphia's defense is going to be that much stronger. And they're in top form. Their roster is absolutely ridiculous. And I guess I got to pick Philly.
By the way, Philadelphia is favored currently by they're favored by 9 points.
That's a lot. I don't know
if that's a lot too. And the over under is 95.5.
Okay.
But yeah, I think 9 points is a lot.
I actually have almost that exact same thing written down on my paper, and I just took that off the top of my head.
Oh,
off the dome.
Off the dome, Philly minus 9.5, over under 95.
Wow.
You should get into sports betting, my dude.
I don't know. I'm only like 65% on the year. I don't think that's good enough to spend money on.
Actually, when it comes to sports betting, that actually may be pretty good.
Oh, shoot.
We'll have to reach out to Adam Markowitz and see what he thinks. If that's good or not. It's tough. I kind of agree with you on this one, Ben. It's tough to, I want to pick Albany too, because this team seems to be gelling so well. I guess to me, it depends on how Radabaugh comes out. You know, he did have a slight injury at the end of the game 2 weeks ago. Seems like he is going to be playing with and currently no issues. I would love to pick Albany to win this, but it's tough. It's tough to pick Albany to win this game. You know, Philly at home. I think Philly's won the last 20 at 21 at home. So It's tough to pick them. It really is. But I think this game will be close. I think this game will be a lot closer than what the first game of the year was. I think just like they've been able to do all year, I think it will be anywhere between 3 and 5 points, I think. So that's it, guys. I mean, it's week six. We only got 6 regular season weeks left. No, 7. 7 regular season weeks left.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, no, when you're talking about only a 12-game season this year. Any other plans, guys, before we finish up?
Me and John are going to be out there. We're going to be out there on Saturday.
We are going to be out there this Saturday in Washington.
We're going to be, shooting the boys. Got an interview with T.T. Tolliver on Sunday. And, we're going to try to make some movie magic.
Nice. I'm sure everybody is waiting, just like I am. We're waiting for your next documentary to come out. So we're all looking forward to it. I'm sure you'll get the hits. You get the likes.
Yeah, trying to get those likes.
It's tough on Vimeo, isn't it?
That's why I do it.
Elusive.
Folks. Yeah, the elusive Vimeo like is it's harder, but it's a more focused platform.
I agree. You know? Yeah, I agree. You know, good thing you're not tied into a contract, right? Wink, wink.
Oh, I know. I'm in that 5-year Vimeo contract. You can say anything on the internet and people believe it.
I tell you, God.
I love it. I love it.
Did you hear that Donald Trump is president?
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Yeah, supposedly.
Oh, my gosh.
Supposedly.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's huge. Huge. Yeah. So enjoy the week, everybody. Don't forget that both games will be on Saturday. Again, if you have any questions for us, send them to me at tim.capra@arenafan.com, and we will try to work them into the show or get you the answers that you're looking forward to. John, thanks as usual. Ben, welcome back, sir.
Good to be back.
And next week, because John will be on the Love Boat, it'll be Ben and myself. So, John, be safe. And
thank you. Thank you.
And make sure that you pay attention when they're going over the evacuation drill, okay? Don't want you to get lost.
Lost at sea.
Lost at sea. That's right.
That would be so fun.
In theory.
If one of our co-hosts was lost at sea, that we'd probably get so many more subscribers.
Yeah, but then we could bring in our new co-host, Wilson. It'd be perfect. Yeah, perfect.
Exactly. Yes. Very good, Tim. Very good.
Thank you. So for everybody here at AFL tonight, for John Stark, Brent Fracinelli, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.